Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back the governor of Rhode Island, Gina Raimondo. Thank you for joining us, Governor.
Good morning.
Governor Raimondo's first budget has attracted both praise and criticism. The governor calls it a blueprint for sparking an economic revival in Rhode Island. But critics say there are too many assumptions, including unspecified Medicaid cuts, too many tax or fee increases, and not enough steps to improve Rhode Island's business climate. Governor, how do you respond to that criticism?
Of course, there'll always be criticism. We took a $200 million deficit and we balanced the budget without any broad-based tax increases and with substantial investments in economic growth, starting with fully funding K through 12 education, proposals to make college more affordable, proposals to put people back to work by rebuilding school buildings and infrastructure, and important tax cuts to improve the business climate, such as the phase out of the sales tax on commercial users of energy.
And yet, there has been a strong backlash by the real estate industry against your proposal to tax vacation homes worth more than $1 million and also a tax on premiums for health care.
Yes. You know, again, you have to remember where we started. Rhode Island has one of the worst economies in the country and one of the biggest budget deficits in the country. So there's no easy choices. And the decisions that I made in that budget were guided by the simple goal of creating jobs and sparking an economic comeback, which is why there are no broad-based tax increases, no income tax increases, no tax increases to hurt businesses. It is true. We are asking the wealthiest among us, folks that own multi-million dollar second homes, to pay a very modest assessment on that home. And, you know, we're asking a lot of people, and everyone's got to pitch in. If we're going to turn Rhode Island around, everyone's got to pitch in.
Let's go to Maureen. What is your evaluation of the governor's budget?
Well, I'm more positive about it. I think it's really a good first beginning, not only in terms of balancing incentives for business, funding education. Of course, there's quibbles on the margins. Everyone would have quibbles on the margins. The two other things, one is that it begins to attack the structural deficit, which I think is very, very important. And I think you're getting a lot of support in that regard. And the other thing is, this is only now. The economy's on a roll. So we're hoping to see more revenues. So some of the assumptions can be positive, and I think it's safe to assume we'll have more money down the road.
It's an excellent point. This budget is a blueprint to put us on a path of economic growth. The only way forward for Rhode Island, the only real way to eliminate the structural budget deficit is to create jobs. If we can create $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 good middle class jobs, we can take care of our budget deficit. And that's what this budget is designed to do.
And Scott, as we know, the governor is also benefiting from good timing. This week, the news came out that Rhode Island is now the eighth worst for unemployment rate. She can't claim single-handed credit for that. What is your evaluation of the governor's budget?
I think a lot of things are looking up. If you look at the cranes in the air, we've got a nursing school here in Providence in the line. We've got a hotel at Twin River. Big renovations at GTEC. We have the engineering school at URI. So there's a lot of projects in the pipeline, continuing building at Electric Boat. And all of this stuff was done before the governor got to be governor. I think one of the problems in this budget and was the vagueness with the way that a lot of it was delivered. Particularly, I think if you're trying to make health care affordable for people, and we've tried to do that, done a good job over the past few years, it's very difficult, I think, to take and tax 132,000 people with a tax on their almost 4% in some cases on their health insurance premiums. I think that's problematic, and I hope the legislature will look at it. But as a first budget, it's probably good the legislature will tinker around the margins, and I hope they don't get tied up in what Freud called the narcissism of small differences and make a big frittata out of things that are really tinkering on the margins.
We're going to move on with some questions for the governor. Governor, you've underscored the depth and severity of Rhode Island's economic problems and how making improvements will take time. Can your goals on economic development be realized in this term for you as governor?
Well, certainly some can. Again, my primary goal is to set Rhode Island on a path of economic prosperity. So this budget is designed to provide some immediate stimulus in getting people back to work. We're raising the minimum wage. We are increasing the earned income tax credit, you know, to make work pay. All that is money that we're going to put in people's pockets they can spend right away. We are rebuilding schools. We're creating an infrastructure bank. That's going to get people back to work right away.
Will you need a second term to really finish the job of improving Rhode Island's economy?
You know, it's a continuous improvement. My job job is to set Rhode Island on a path. Here's the thing. Rhode Island was too dependent on old line manufacturing for too long. And right now, my job is to say, let's make sure people have skills. This is a big skills budget. We got to get Rhode Island into the 21st century, get ourselves in the flow of innovation, advanced industries. And I'm going to be the governor that does that because now we live in a world high skill, high pay. Have to do that.
Let me hold you there so we can go to a question from Scott.
Yeah, reinventing Medicaid seems like a good idea. But in the short term, isn't it really difficult to cut between the state and the Fed $170 or $80 million out of this? And to reinvent it, what can you do more than just squeeze the vendors to reinvent? Medicaid, you need federal waivers. You need approval from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And I think this is not going to happen between now and the end of April. Is that a little too optimistic?
No. So, look, first of all, it's not an option. You know, again, we have a $200 million deficit. Deficit's $350 million next year. Many other states are doing it. So is it difficult? Absolutely. Do I wish we had more time? Of course. But do we have to work within the reality? Yes. And here, over time, the way we're trying to do this is we want to start paying for value, not for volume. What does that mean? If you're in a nursing home now and you're not taken care of and you fall six times a year and you wind up in the hospital or in the ER, we just pay. We pay. It's all fee for service. We need to change the payment system so that we pay for quality and not just volume. And what that means is better care for folks and much less cost. 7% of the highest users account for the majority of Medicaid spend. We're not doing a good job with those patients. They're not getting great care and they're incredibly expensive. So it's time to restructure the way we do it.
Let's go to a question from Maureen.
Getting back to this proposed surplus that we're going to have or more revenue, where do you see in this budget that assuming the income from the state is better, where would you want to put those resources?
Well, I mentioned in my budget address two specific areas. I propose increasing the earned income tax credit over 2 years, but if there is extra money in the budget, if the revenue estimates look better, I'd like to see us do it this year. We got to make work pay. We got to put money in the pockets of working families today. The other area is the budget calls for about $20 million of cuts in state employee personnel. And if there is additional room in the budget, I'd like the General Assembly to consider reducing that target. Governor Chafee signed a contract giving wage increases to public employees, which I intend to honor. You know, it's going to be hard to get to the $20 million.
We're almost out of time here, but Governor, we have to ask you about the possibility of a pension settlement, which is a matter being taken up by retirees and union members in the week to come. We know you're limited in what you can say because of a gag order. What do you think of this gag order? Is it right that public officials like you are not allowed to speak about this monumental matter involving the taxpayers' money?
You know, I have to respect the judge's wishes. The judge has ordered us, and at every step, we've respected the judge's order. So she's doing what she thinks is best, and we're going to honor that. I think it's fairly typical in settlement discussions for the substance to be confidential during the period of the settlement. So again, you know, we're operating in good faith.
Before we go, how optimistic are you that there will be a settlement?
I want to be optimistic because, and we're certainly working very hard at it. Obviously, a settlement on the right terms that protects taxpayers and shores up the pension system is a huge win for Rhode Island. So fingers crossed.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And the governor of Rhode Island, Gina Raimondo.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. If you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at rapr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is made possible by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation.